from the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, February the 14th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Reminder, guys, this is Valentine's Day. Isn't it funny how guys need to be reminded, but women don't? Oh, well. Let's get things started officially here with...
The Daily Datagram.
Yep. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. A good one, and this is exclusively for Valentine's Day. It says here, love and time, the only two things in all of life and all the world that can't be bought but spent. Wow. Right. A little good advice here, too. Just don't spend it all in one place.
You are talking about the nonsensical ravings of a lunatic mind.
Moving right along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast.
Twisted History.
It's good.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Learn something.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Yeah.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
I doubt that very seriously. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1899. Voting machines were approved by the U.S. Congress for use in federal elections. You have to wonder what Congress knew that the voters didn't, right? And on this day in 1983, the United American Bank of Knoxville, Tennessee collapsed. The business, not the building. The building is still there. But the bank's president, Jake Butcher, was later convicted of fraud and spent some time breaking rocks in the hot sun.
I do not know this man.
Now that some of the uproar over Tucker Carlson's interview, and of course the uproar coming from the left, and of course the mainstream media, but Tucker Carlson had that groundbreaking interview with Vlad Putin the other day, and now that a lot of that uproar has subsided somewhat, we found some interesting insights to be drawn. According to Carlson, who spoke at the World Government Summit in Dubai, his conversation with Putin suggests that Mr. Putin himself is now prepared to negotiate a compromise over Ukraine. Now, naturally, this would signal a potential shift in the prolonged crisis. Is it really a shift? Or has this been a stance from the beginning on the part of Putin, but we just didn't know about it because of all of the leftist and establishment uproar? Because you and I both know that this administration wants war. The military-industrial complex wants war because this is the only way they can profit. Never mind that war draws a country into crippling debt. I can see it now. You go to the movie theater and there's going to be a little box over there saying, buy war bonds. Gee, here we are back to 1943. But Carlson's wonderful engagement. I don't know if you've seen parts of the interview or seen the whole interview. Carlson was excellent. And his engagement with Putin was the first of its kind since the Ukraine thing started in February of 22. And I think he provided a pretty interesting glimpse into the mindset of the Kremlin amidst international tensions, and there are lots of them. I mean, look around you. The world is starting to blow up. We've got trouble in the Middle East. We've got trouble in Asia. We've got trouble there in Eastern Europe. My God, where's this going to take us? And everybody's saying, well, World War III is on the brink. Oh, okay. But during their discussion, Putin took the opportunity to mention his narrative, to articulate his narrative on the war, emphasizing Russia's interests and calling for Washington to recognize them. He urged Kyiv to engage in talks, asserting that negotiations are the path to peace. And come on, admit it. There's got to be an element of truth to that, right? I mean, does anybody believe that Ukraine can win this war? Tucker, his own self, has made that point clear. And yet, this guy Zelensky, former comedian, former entertainer, And I'm not going to knock it because one of the best presidents this country of ours ever had was a former entertainer, a former actor. But this guy Zelensky just seems to be in a permanent state of pissed off. And he just wants to continue this war against Russia. It ain't going to happen. Now, the interview actually got a lot of coverage in Russian media. And it allowed Putin to reject claims that Moscow plans to attack Poland or other NATO countries. And he also addressed the West's inability to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. He made a point of underscoring the resilience and industrial capabilities of his nation, which, I would argue, at the present time, probably exceed ours quite a bit. Carlson noted that, contrary to Western belief, Russia's production of military equipment like missiles and artillery has proven pretty darned good. I mean, let's use the word robust. And despite the gravity of the situation, Putin appeared confident and very composed throughout the interview, even making occasional friendly remarks toward Carlson. Putin stayed focused. He ventured into over 800 years of Russian history to give some context for his country's actions. Notably, Carlson refrained from questioning Putin about allegations of war crimes by Russian troops in Ukraine or the domestic crackdown on dissent. That wouldn't have helped anything. But Carlson's commentary on the interview and the subsequent off-the-record conversation with Putin has generated a lot of interest and speculation, of course. I mean, he suggested that as the conflict drags on, and it will, it's going to drag on and on and on and on and on because we have two bullheaded sides here, right? Putin and Biden. And Biden, of course, being run by the U.S. military-industrial complex. So Putin wouldn't become more open to negotiations, but rather Russia's only going to grow stronger. So this point of view challenges the prevailing narrative in the West and calls for a reconsideration of the approach toward Russia. Now, Tucker's insights come after his own critical stance on U.S. support for Ukraine following the invasion. Just a mere case of recent history. And his commentaries, which have been circulated on Russian state-run media, question why Americans are encouraged to harbor animosity toward Putin. Putin never did anything to us. He has never acted aggressively toward the United States. And this damn Hillary Clinton and her ilk, you know, it's all Russia, Russia, Russia. Our animosity toward Russia is ancient history. When the Soviet Union fell, that was the end of it. We had a lot of opportunities there, none of which we took. Now, the Kremlin's decision to grant Carlson an interview, according to Putin's spokesman, was due to his differing viewpoint from the one-sided stance of other Western media outlets, the mainstream media. I was so frustrated the other day. I was trying to look up some more information on this Lakewood Church shooting that took place in Houston last weekend. And I used DuckDuckGo as my search engine. As my search engine. And they do the same thing that Google does or that Chrome does. They list all of the left-wing media at the top. And you have to scroll down a page and a half before you can find Fox News. And this is both electronic and print media. All the left-wing stuff is up at the top. You see, this is where our information is controlled, in these six companies that own virtually all our media. And by media, I'm talking about television, radio, newspapers, magazines, movies, run by six countries, companies. Six countries, that's a Freudian slip. So here you have Ukraine remaining steadfast in their position, repeatedly stating that they're not going to compromise with Russia involving any cession of its territory. The country's determined to reclaim all land occupied by Moscow's forces, including the Donbas region and Crimea, which, despite annexation by Russia, are still widely considered to be Ukrainian territory. So here the world watches All these unfolding events in Eastern Europe, Carlson's revelations offer a new dimension to the discourse on the Ukraine conflict. His assertion that Putin is willing to compromise could be a pivotal moment in the search for a resolution, but with both sides holding firm to their stances, the path to peace remains complex and certainly up for question. And the thing that gets me is the reaction that the mainstream media in our country had to Tucker Carlson's interview. Just the very fact that he would sit down with Vlad Putin made Tucker Carlson evil. Now this, once and for all, should show you the adolescent mindset of the mainstream media. According to the Daily Caller, federal authorities nabbed an Afghan national on the terror watch list. This happened last week, February 5th, after he crossed the southern border illegally into California, according to an internal federal memo that was somehow exclusively obtained by the Daily Caller News Foundation. Now, the way this shakes out, Border Patrol agents arrested Arif Tanha, 30 years old, in California's San Diego sector at the Jacumba Hot Springs, and determined that he was a positive match on the terror watch list as a known associate of a terrorist organization, according to the memo. And while the memo didn't disclose which terrorist organization Tanha was allegedly associated with, the illegal alien denied ever having connections to Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. Who, me? Surely you jest. I'm just a common, ordinary Afghan looking for opportunity in the Western world. So, pardon me, I just kicked something under the desk here. According to notes accounting his interview with a federal agent interviewed by the DCNF, they're starting to put two and two together about this guy. He admitted during one of the interviews, because they go through a series of them, you know, good cop, bad cop kind of thing. And he admitted, after crossing the border, to being arrested 4 days in 2011 after U.S. commandos and Afghan forces raided his family's home in Afghanistan. And according to the interview notes, Tanha deflected and refused to answer when the federal agent asked why authorities raided his home and arrested him. So immediately the red flag goes up there on that. Now, the Daily Caller isn't publishing the notes of the Afghan national's background interview to protect sources, which I guess is a smart thing to do. But Tanha, who has made a credible fear claim of returning to Afghanistan, is in Immigration and Customs Enforcement custody at the moment, pending his case proceedings. And that's according to an ICE official. I don't know how long this process takes. But asylum officers generally interview migrants to determine whether or not an individual has a well-founded fear of persecution on account of your race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group or political opinion if returned to your country, that would keep them from returning home and place them into asylum proceedings. That's generally the way things are done, according to the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. Now, during his interview process, Tanha told a Fed agent that he traveled from Afghanistan to Iran, then Qatar, where he got a visa for Brazil, Peru, Ecuador, Colombia, and Panama to make his way to the U.S. I mean, imagine that. Can you imagine going through all those different places and going through all that different paperwork with the idea in mind that you're going to make it to the U.S. And after seeing all that, I start to take this sympathetic tone toward him. Gee whiz. I mean, would a terrorist waste all his time trying to do it? Maybe so. I would imagine they would if they're getting paid enough, right? Because it's all about the Benjamins, right? So, anyhow, along the way, Tanha said that he was stopped twice for biometric checks and questioning. He said he spent $20,000 to reach the U.S. Where did he get that kind of money? And he said that his primary source of funding is a brother in Kuwait. Okay, credible, I guess. He also shared that he was denied entry into Europe in 2020 and lived in Dubai from 2014 to 2019, where he did roofing. And in Dubai, that is a hot, hot job. I don't know of a single American kid who could do that job. But he said that he didn't know why he was denied entry into Europe. Well, I think in Europe they don't always need a reason. But Daily Caller also reviewed the TikTok account that Tana gave to federal authorities, which has more than 54,000 followers, appears to showcase parts of his journey, showing that his goal was to reach Canada. In his interview with the U.S. agent, Tana, which is spelled T-A-N-H-A-H. So I'm taking that to mean Tana. Okay. Anyhow, he provided an address in San Antonio, where he said he planned to reside with the goal of permanently remaining in the U.S. Got a lot of roofing work in San Antonio, I can tell you that. Anyhow, the TikTok account has a bio that reads, "I love Allah," and a series of posts showing his journey to the U.S. along with his Muslim faith. And one of the posts reads, "May Allah protect Palestine," with an image of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. On Monday's podcast, I said that Joe Biden had a really bad week last week, and he did. I mean, it's almost as if his mental capacity diminished somewhat between Monday of last week and Friday. And these concerns about his ability to continue the job grow as he goes about his daily life around the White House and wherever they place him. There's a new poll conducted by ABC News. Yes, that fine left-wing organization. And it just revealed that almost 90% of Americans, I guess a key word there, almost, not quite, but almost, 90% of Americans believe Biden is not fit to serve. Now, the poll's findings discovered that 86% of Americans think Biden is too far gone for a second term, and this includes 73%, nearly three-quarters of Democrats. Now, the ABC News article reporting on the poll went to some pretty intensive lengths to twist the results against Trump, believe it or not, focusing on how 62% of Americans surveyed said Trump was too old for the presidency. Yeah, well, when you have a poll, always check the source first. And in this particular case, the dead giveaway is it's ABC. ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN all hate Donald Trump. They hate Donald Trump. Never mind that he's going to go down in history as one of the best presidents we ever had. Of course, history, that's assuming history is somewhat accurate. History has a tendency to also lean left. Lean? Did I say lean? Boy, that was generous. But I have an excerpt here from the ABC News article. They said here, "An overwhelming majority of Americans think President Joe Biden is too old to serve another term, according to a new ABC News Ipsos poll." According to the poll, conducted using Ipsos Knowledge Panel, whatever the hell that is, 86% of Americans think Biden, 81, is too old to serve another term as president. That figure includes 59% of Americans who think both he and former President Trump, the Republican frontrunner, are too old, and 27% who think only Biden is too old. Well, at least they included that much. I'll give them that. Nice, ABC, you at least included that. 62% of Americans think Trump, who is 77, is too old to serve as president. There's a large difference in how partisans view their respective nominees. Duh. 73% of Democrats think Biden's too old to serve, but only 35% of Republicans think Trump is too old to serve. 91% of independents think Biden is too old to serve, and 71% say the same about Trump. Well, the big difference here is Trump's mental capacities are not diminished. And he can make mincemeat out of a 20-year-old. But anyhow, this new poll comes on the heels of last week's report from Special Counsel Robert Hur, which recommended that Biden shouldn't face charges over his handling of classified documents while out of office, but did cast doubt on his mental fitness. But, and of course, that whole judgment there on the part of this guy Robert Hur was complete BS. Total BS. Now, Vice President Harris called the reports politically motivated. But Zero Hedge noted how hidden in the ABC News report were some more very significant findings about Americans' confidence in Trump's handling of some of the biggest issues facing our nation. Here's what Zero Hedge wrote. They said, buried at the bottom of the article are findings of the poll that most Americans believe Trump would do a better job of handling immigration and the border than Biden by 44 to 26%. Big margin there. And the handling of crime, 41% to 28%. Again, big margin. And the economy, 43% to 31%. And inflation, 41% to 31%. Pretty consistent. The ABC poll's revelation comes in the wake of the Her report, of course, which described him as an elderly man with a poor memory, not Trump, but Biden, and called into question Biden's mental fitness to remain in office. And meanwhile, Biden seems too focused on the shrinking size of ice cream cartons to really seriously address any of the real problems facing our country. So, I don't know. What do you think? You think Biden's on his way out? I'm telling you, he is not going to be on the ticket in November. In fact, I think the Democrat Party is going to sweep him out by May at the latest. Being a veteran myself, this is something I don't like to see, but each U.S. military service saw a notable decline in white recruits over the past 5 years, according to data obtained by the Daily Caller. And this is going to likely factor into the military's crippling recruiting crisis. In other words, it's just going to get worse. The Army, Navy, and Air Force missed their recruiting objectives by historically large margins. And that term right there just gives me shivers. Historically large margins. And this was in fiscal year 23, because that's all the information we have. And, of course, that was a period that ended on September 30th. And apparently what's happening here is the broader American public is growing wary of military service. And this is according to Department of Defense stats. Officials and experts who spoke to the Daily Caller News Foundation have been making it kind of clear. Since 2018... the number of recruits from minority groups has remained steady, or in some cases increased, while the number of white recruits has declined, according to data on the demographics of new recruits obtained by the Daily Caller. Now, the data, they say here, reveals the decline of white recruits is almost entirely responsible for the recruiting crisis. This is according to Will Tebow, who's director of the American Military Project at the Claremont Institute. He says a smaller proportion of white Americans serve now than ever before. He says this is fundamental because complementary increases in black and Hispanic recruits have not taken place. Okay, so that's why this is such a huge factor. And U.S. troops are under attack in the Middle East, maintaining a heightened posture against Russia and Europe, and bolstering deterrence against the People's Republic of China. And then, of course, there's the problem that we're having with Iran sponsoring all the terrorism and military strikes against U.S. interests. So basically what's happening here, the U.S. military is weakening and they're unable to respond to some of the most pressing challenges to U.S. national security. And that's according to a report just released by the Heritage Foundation, which is an organization I trust implicitly. They said this is a huge blow as the recruiting crisis is the worst in the history of all of the all-volunteer force. And that's according to Robert Greenway, director of the Allison Center for National Security at Heritage. And he was referring to the plummeting numbers of white recruits since 2018. Now, we didn't get an all-volunteer force until, when was that? Late 70s? Early 80s? I think that's when we finally got into an all-volunteer force. Now, other demographic groups have fluctuated over those 5 years, but none consistently tumbled over time like the white demographic. In fiscal year 2018, that was only 1 year, sorry about that. My bad. 44,042 new recruits to the Army, or 56.4% of the total, were white, according to information by the Daily Caller. And that number collapsed to a low of 25,070, or 44% of the total, in fiscal 2023. Big difference. And over the same time period, Black Army recruits increased from 19.6% of the total in 2018 to 23.5% in 2023. And Hispanic Army recruits rose from 17.2 to 23.5. But the real number of recruits from the remaining non-white demographic groups also dipped from fiscal 2018 to 2023. As the total number of new personnel in the Army signed on each year fell dramatically. And none of these groups saw the same degree of decline as white recruits. Now, military.com first reported the precipitous drop in the number of Army soldiers recruited in fiscal year 2023 from 5 years prior. So, an Army official, who remains unnamed, told military.com, what we're seeing is a reflection of society. What we know less of is what's driving all of these things. There's no widely accepted cause. Well, I'm sure they're going to continue to pick this thing apart day after day after day. But what it comes down to right now is that Gen Z has no interest in serving in the military. And why would they? I mean, life is too cushy for them. But as the economy gets worse, I think we're going to find more and more Gen Zers are just going to give up and say, you know what, I'll just go into the military. I'll join the Navy, join the Air Force. At least that's a steady job. And then maybe I'll make it a career. But as things stand right now, among white people, there's no interest in it. And that's not a good thing. Let me wish you a happy Valentine's Day, even though I'm not participating, since I'm going through a divorce. But have a happy Valentine's Day. Let's turn to some laughs with Robert Mack.
I don't like July. My favorite month is January because that's when my birthday is, and that's the best month to have. It's the best month to have a birthday because you don't have to wait as long, and it's also. It's the time of year that you get a fresh start. I joined a health club because this year because I decided I want to lose about $30 a month. And also, I like January because I do a lot of Christmas parties for companies, and those are in December. But now a lot of companies are doing their parties in January, and I did one that was great. They flew me out to California and put me up at a nice place facing the ocean, the Atlantic. And I was watching the History Channel, and sure, it's nothing but repeats. But I learned something fascinating about California. It's the most diverse state in the country because 160 years ago, there weren't a lot of people living there. And then one guy found one little piece of gold, and then men from every corner of the planet came to strike it rich. And then they were followed by women who follow men who follow money. And that's pretty much how the West was won. First the gold diggers and then the gold diggers. And it makes California very diverse, which is fine, but also very politically correct because they don't want anyone to be offended by anything. So they didn't call it a Christmas party. I said, it's a Christmas party. And they said, well, no, don't say that. And I said, well, then I'll say Happy Hanukkah, too. And they're like, no, because then you'll have to say, have a beautiful Boxing Day and a Kwesi Kwanzaa and a terrific Timcat. Just forget it. It's a holiday party. Just call it a holiday party. And they changed the songs. They didn't play I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas for two reasons. On that one, and yeah. Frosty the Snowman is now Caitlin, a person of snow. We three kings of Orient are very offended that you would say Orient. You can't say Orient anymore because they don't want to offend Asians, and you can't say spick and span anymore because they don't want to offend Latinos. Yep, you have to say spick and Spaniard. It's very, very touchy.
He's so weird. Make it a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.